prayers. Om Nauna Vyakya Prakatita Parabrahma Tattvam Yuvanam Varshishante Vasadrishiganayaravratam Brahma Nishtai Acharyendram Karakalita Chinmudramananda Murtim Swatmaramam Mudita Vadanam Dakshinamurtimide. Our last verse. Sarvatmatvamiti Sarvatmatvamiti Stuti Kritamidam Stuti Kritamidam Yasmat Amushmin Stave Yasmat Amushmin Stave Tenasya Shravanat Tenasya Shravanat Tadartamananat Tadartamananat Dhyanatcha Sankirtanat Dhyanatcha Sankirtanat Sarvatmatvamahi Sarvatmatvamahavibhuti Sahitam Sarvatmatvamahavibhuti-sahitam Syadishwaratvam-svataha Siddhetat-punarashtadha-parinatam Siddhetat-punarashtadha-parinatam Chaishwaryam-avyahatam Aishwaryam-avyahatam Chaishwaryam-avyahatam Sarva Atmatvam Iti Sputi Kritam Idam Yasmat Amushmin Stave Tena Asya Shravanat Tat Artha Mananat Dhyanat Cha Sankirtanat Sarvatmatva Mahavibhuti Sahitam Syat Ishwaratvam Swataha Siddhyet Tat Punar Ashtadha Parinatam Cha Aishwaryam Avyahatam. Okay. So, first line at the end, yes mat, it's in the last half, yes mat amushmin stave, yes mat, because amushmin stave, in this stotra, in this hymn of praise, amushmin, the locative amushmin stave, in this hymn of praise called a stotra, so in this, because in this hymn of praise, Svuti kritam idam. This is made very clear. Svuti makes something very clear, very, very clearly seen, clearly understood, shining, manifest. Makes it recognized. Svuti kritam means it has been made. Krita, it has been made svutam, very clear, so that it's seen. Svuti kritam. And what is the idam? Sarvatmatvam iti, being the self of all. Sarva means all. Atma, self. Sarva atma, the self of all. Sarvatmatvam, being the self of all. So because in this stotra, being the self of all has been made very clear so that it can be seen, recognized. Shining with consciousness. The tena, next line, tena, therefore, asya means of this stotra, of this Dakshinamurti stotram, shravanat. This is our fifth case. Therefore, because of this, the shravana of this, manana of the meaning of this, dhyanat, contemplation on this, sankirtanat, from sankirtana, from the teaching of this. So it's therefore from doing shravana, from doing manana on the meaning, from doing dhyana, nididhyasana, and from sankirtana, teaching. Sankirtana can also be just the repetition, the study or the repetition, the repetitive chanting of this. But for a Vedantin, that is not enough. It's not that you're chanting all of the different mantras and stotras that we learn is a beautiful thing, but in terms of the Vedanta, it's an understanding it, a contemplation on it, removing all of the doubts through manana, contemplating, meditating, nididhyasana on it, and teaching it. So we'll talk about that. So from doing that, then what? Sarvatmatva mahavibhuti sahitam. It says, together, sahitam at the end of that compound, it means together with. Sarvatmatva mahavibhuti sahitam. So from doing all of this, together with the great mahavibhuti. A vibhuti is like a siddhi or a huge blessing or a capacity. Like say, for instance, a vibhuti, say you have different vibhutis. I always thought one of Swamiji's great vibhutis was his voice. Mm-hmm. He had the most beautiful voice. It was extraordinary. He had a vibhuti in terms of his Sanskrit pronunciation. He had perfect Sanskrit pronunciation, timing, and all of that. And then the blessings of the vibhuti of his teaching. So that's just an example of the vibhuti, something that just shines among all others. You know, this voice stands out. In the chapter 3 or 4 of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna goes and lists all of the vibhutis, many of them in the world. Like, among all of the rivers, I am the Ganga. I am the Ganga. Of all of the mountains, I am the Himalayas. You know, and he picks out just that which stands out with all glory and praise. And so what is the greatest river among all of the rivers? He says, I am the greatest river of all the rivers and the greatest mountain of all of the mountains. Just pointing out the vibhutis. And so here, what is the maha vibhuti? What is the greatest vibhuti of all vibhutis? Is the sarvatmatvam. The sarvatmatvam, the recognition that this self that I am is the self of all beings. So recognizing that this Atma that I am is Brahman, is the very self of all beings, of all things, of the entire creation. So together with this Mahavibhuti, there's no greater vibhuti than that. You know? So together with that Mahavibhuti, that greatest vibhuti, which is the Sarvatmatvam, the being, the Atma of all. Being the Atma, the self of everything. That is the greatest Mahavibhuti. So together with that, there is the natural Ishwaratvam that comes from that. From that record, the Swataha here means natural. The natural state of being Ishwara. So that comes along with being the self of all beings. If you're the self of all beings, you're the self of Ishwara also. That means you are Ishwara. So we say, in terms of what really is self-knowledge, or this, if we say the greatest vibhuti is that sarvatmatvam, that comes along with the natural state of being Ishwara. Really, this knowledge is to be complete. For it to be complete, you have to be able to say, I am Ishwara. That this conscious being that I am is Ishwara. not that the body, mind, sense is Ishvara. It is Ishvara too, but it's part to the whole. Right? And so it doesn't have all of the vibhutis, or it doesn't from its own standpoint experience itself as being the whole, the sattvam. This jiva does not experience itself as being everything. It recognizes itself as being the self of everything. The self of everything is non-dual. It's not big, it's not small. It is just simply non-dual me. But this non-dual me is the very being, the essence of all that is. And so that sarvatvam is the mahavibhuti. It's the greatest vibhuti that it is. It's the recognition that there's nothing here but you. But in the recognition that there's nothing here by you, but you, is the recognition that you are Ishvara. From the standpoint of who you actually are. Not from the standpoint of the jiva, I am this body, mind, sense organs, and I am Ishvara. No. That is something has gone wrong. that's like the ultimate inflation. It's a disease. It's a sick mental illness. It's a bad, so a terrible mental illness. But this is the understanding the truth of it. That this conscious being, that is my very self, is the self of all beings, is the very self of Ishvara. And so this self, from the standpoint of my own self, is the one that is the Sat-Chit Anantam, the being of the entire creation. So this entire creation comes from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me. It is by nature Mithya. Mithya means it's an incidental attribute to myself. It is extremely natural to me. It is one of my attributes. It's just that it's Mithya. Otherwise, I would be dual. If it wasn't Mithya, then I would be all of these parts. But I'm not all of these parts. All of these parts that make up the entire creation have me for their Sat-Chit, for their consciousness, for their knownness, for their beingness. So I am, that's the Mahavibhuti, I am all of this. But then there's this very natural vibhuti or siddhi that comes along with this, and that is the recognition that all of this is myself. This is all of it. All this body, mind, sense organs, table, the entire upadi, Ishvara's entire upadi is only myself because it is mithya. Because it is mithya, it has no other being for it to be independent, not one part of it. And so all of this is only like the clay pot. The pot is only clay. There's this extraordinary experience of the pot when there is only clay. That's so important. There is only clay there, but we experience the pot. That's what we mean when we say something is mithya. We experience it, but the only thing there is its adhishtana. Nothing else. And yet we have the experience of it. That's what we mean by mithya. So when we say this whole entire creation, this whole Ishvara is mithya, it means the only thing here is consciousness. And yet we experience this creation. That's what we mean by incidental attribute. Now, why the clay pot is so important is because it's not like this is some woo-woo illusion. Because it has fully enjoys the sarvatmatvam. It is fully consciousness. There is no distance between this display and me and the conscious being. And that is why it is so real. Because I am real. Consciousness is real. The Sat-Chit is real. It doesn't come and go. It doesn't move. It is the very substance, the very being of all experience without any type of exception. And so as we realize this Mahavibhuti, you know, this being Ishvara also is something which is recognized because there is nothing away from you. And there is no part of this creation that is other than you, even though you experience it. It's the same for Ishvara. Ishvara has this infinite maha, this infinite creation that is like an infinite mind. We say that it's likened to an infinite mind, Because just like when you have a thought, whatever the thought may be, the whole thought is pervaded by you. The whole thought enjoys your sat, your being, and your consciousness. And so the whole thought is known because your being is self-evident knownness. Right? And so the whole thought enjoys your being entirely without any part being blacked out. As long as it's a vritti, the whole vritti enjoys the sat-chit, conscious being me. It enjoys me, my own self, without any exception. And the next vritti will too, and the next vritti will too. So for Ishvara, the whole infinite creation enjoys me, the conscious being, which is the self of all beings. And so like an infinite mind, the whole creation is known because of the pervasion of sattva. Sattva, rajas, and tamas. And so it's good to liken it to an infinite mind, as long as you don't think then there's an infinite body and all of this. There's this big infinite mind floating around in this human body. It's like that. It's the whole infinite creation is an infinite mind with no particular point of identification. The identification is with a whole. Like for you, if you have a dream without a character of that you're identified with in the dream, then you're just the whole. If you're identified with a character in the dream, then you're a jiva in the dream. If you're not identified with a character in the dream, you're Ishvara. Right? And you know both in reference to the dream. That's why the dream or that your imagination is such a powerful drishtanta, such a powerful illustration for understanding our situation here. So it says this Ishvaratvam, together with the greatest Mahavibhuti that there is, and that is the recognition of the self, the Sarvatmatvam, being the Sarvatma of the self of all of this. Of all of this Ishvara, you are the self of the whole thing. You are the being, you are Satchit, you are its truth. And so then he says also, and that being so, then Siddhyet tet punar ashta parinatam ja aishwaryam avyahatam. When you recognize this as yourself, then in fact all of the vibhutis are yours. There is no vibhuti, there is no siddhi that is not yours. If it is Ishwara's, if it belongs to a part of Ishvara, say there's a the greatest pianist in the world. You should just enjoy that vibhuti that you have as Ishvara. You know, if you take all of the vibhutis in the whole creation, you can say, "Oh, I wish I were that. I wish I was great like that." But for a jnani, these are all your vibhutis. They're all Ishvara's vibhutis. So Ishvara, when he says, and when Krishna is saying, among all the mountains, this is my vibhuti. You know, so you would say, among all the mountains, this Himalayas is my vibhuti. You know? Of all of the tennis players, who's your favorite tennis player? This is the greatest vibhuti. He's the greatest. Swamiji would say it's Jimmy Collins. Do you remember him? That he loved Jimmy Collins. In fact, when Jimmy Connors retired, he kind of lost interest. He was the greatest tennis player of all times. That is my vibhuti from the standpoint of Ishvara. Honestly, now all of these siddhis that you were thinking, oh, I don't have that siddhi, or I'm not completely accomplished in this way, or I don't have all the yoga siddhis. In Vedanta, we don't care about these yoga siddhis, about becoming big or small. If those siddhis exist, they're yours. They belong to you. This isn't... there's no competition here. Because there's nothing that is really not you. That they exist in the creation, all these things are the wonders, the vibhutis of the creation, which is my own self. That's actually the truth. To think of yourself as a little jiva floating around in the creation, comparing yourself, oh, this person has more glories than I do, or this person has more this or less, or this person has a lot less. It's ridiculous. The people who have less are you. The people who have more are you. The people who are exalted are you. You know, you're all of it. And so that all of the what we call the siddhis, all of the glories, everything which shines and is outstanding in the creation, that is only yourself. And so there's only appreciation, on and on and on, appreciation. And even with all of your friends and all of the people you know and all of your guru bhais and all of the students, all of them have, you know, different vibhutis, you know, which makes us have a lot of vibhutis. Right? We have a lot of vibhutis because each one of us has something that we're good at. Because I'm good at this, I'm not so good at that, but my friend is good at that, so we got both of them. Mm-hmm. It's more like that. There's not that comparison, there's just enjoyment of Ishwara and all of the glories of Ishwara. So you appreciate those vibhutis as not being other than you, as not being other than Ishwara. And Ishwara, you are the Sarvatmatva, the Mahavibhuti, is the recognition is that I'm the self of all of these things, of all of these people, of Ishwara himself, of the whole Maya Upadi. So that jnanam is there. And so what he's saying is this Dakshinamurti Stotram, you know, starts out with this, you know, Vishwam Darshana Drishyamana Nagari, this whole universe is like a city reflected in a mirror, really only if reflected at me. It starts out with this is from the commentary. The whole thing starts out with that, to show you over on so many different ways that you are the whole, that yourself is not away from any of this. You're the very satchit, the being of all of this. So in this stotra, because yasmat amushmin stave, because in this Dakshinamurti Stotra, the Sarvatmatvam, you're the Sarvatmatvam, the state of being all, the self of all, has been made so clear. Because of that, you should use these ten verses, this Dakshinamurti Stotram. You should shravana, you should study it. You should listen to it over and over and over again, because it's so packed, so... It's meant to give you the whole vision. So it's a lot of times the last verse or two are all praise, you know. And now it's praising and telling you what to do with it and why to appreciate it. So that's common for the last verse. Sometimes for the first verse also. So he says, because this gives the whole vision, that gives you the sarvatmatvam, the recognition that you are the self of all, you should do shravana again and again, until it is completely clear. Continue to use these 10 verses, something that let that be dear to you. So you study it over and over again. And then on what you've learned, what you've understood, then do manana. Manana means, shravana just means listening to it, understanding deeply what the verses say. That's how it is taught, what the Vedanta says. The unfoldment of these verses to realize the Vedic vision of the Upanishads. You study it until you really understand. And then, if there are any doubts or any questions, why couldn't it be like this? Or why couldn't it be like what the Sankhyas say? Or whatever philosophical system you're familiar with, or maybe have some relationship with, why should it be like this and not like that? Or what, and you're coming from your own mind, why couldn't it be like this? Those are that's manana. Each one of those doubts or those questions are really important for your mind, because they're like boulders in your mind. They're not resolved. There's not clarity around it. And so it kind of sticks out. There's like a knot, you know, like a tension in your understanding, because that part's not clear. You shouldn't be afraid of that. That's all. Manana is part of the teaching. Shravana also, you listen until it's clear, till you know what's being said, till you see it. You know, till you have that sputi kritam, means it's as clear as day. You know, Shankara says in his Adhyasa Bhasha, this teaching is like day and night. It becomes day. You know, there is no night. You see it very clearly, and until it comes like that, you have to study it. And then it becomes clear, but in terms of what the Shastra is saying, and you're seeing it, but then you say, well, yeah, but it could be like this. You don't want to swallow that doubt. That's an important doubt. You should solve it for yourself, with a dialogue with your teacher and in satsang and whatnot. That doubt has to be solved. So it's solved to the point of complete resolution, because you see it completely. You understand. That's also, it's important for you. It's important for your students. You know, because the doubts that you have and the doubts that are brought up in the Shastra and in the Bhashyas and the commentaries, those are the doubts that you've had. Those are the doubts that your students will have. And so if your student brings up a doubt and you also haven't resolved that doubt, that's okay, but then you have to say, I have the same doubt. Let's work on that one. Okay? So you can't get around those doubts. They're important. You have to deal with it. So that's manana. To deal with it and be brave. You know? Like, you don't want to have, oh gosh, I put so many years into this. Or, you know, and now here is this doubt. I think I'll just swallow it. Because I don't want to be wrong. I don't want to have wasted my time. You know, and so I'm not even going to deal with these doubts, because then this all becomes a waste of time. Swamiji talks like that sometimes. He said, if at this point in my life or at any time in my life, if there is a doubt that comes up that proves this to be wrong, then let it be wrong. Let the whole thing fall. You have to let it fall. That gives your mind permission to go for it, to really think it through, to not be afraid. You can't be afraid when moksha, and this is just in the East itself, liberation, moksha, is knowledge. That's what it is. It's knowledge. Because freedom has to already be here, or else your nature is bound and limited. What is limited cannot become limitless. You know, it's limited. And so the more you know and the more you study and the more actions you do, limited remains limited, limitless remains limitless. And so if the truth is that your being is limitless and this is mitya, then no matter what you do and how much you study, it's just going to be confirmed. It's not going to be negated. And so if there's something in your mind that is not clear, then you have to stick with it. You have to stick with it until it becomes clear. One thing I feel I had a really, I don't know why I had this. It was just some extreme, some just extreme trust in Swamiji's patience, mm-hmm. his kindness. It was a trust without even having those words, that we had the permission to ask questions. And not only one question, because sometimes you would ask a question and you wouldn't quite understand the question, so he would answer, but he wouldn't be answering my question, you know? And I really wanted that answered. And so as he was going on, I was realizing he was going off track. And of course, I was on fire, you know? I said, no, Swamiji, That's not quite what I mean. He goes, oh, okay, what is it? And then I'd rephrase it and try to make it more clear. And then he would answer that. And sometimes I would go usually, if I didn't get it the first time, I would usually go three levels of questioning. And then sometimes it still wasn't completely clear, and he'd go something like, okay, we'll see. Wait and see. You know, because there were, and that was correct also, because there were other little pieces that had to fall into place before I could get that. But the thing is that you have that persistence, shraddha, that there's something there to know that you're not understanding. That's a shraddha, you know. And so you're willing to go the distance to gain that understanding, you know, rather than fearing that you won't be able to understand, or that the whole thing, that you've come up with a question or an idea that nobody before you has had. And this with this question, the whole stack of cards may collapse. Mm-hmm. It's usually not that. It's usually just shyness. Not wanting to pursue because you're shy. Yeah. I understand that one too. So anyway, you've got shravana, you've got manana, this persistence to see it all the way through because you really want to know. You want to have clarity. And then dhyanam. Dhyanam is nididhyasana. Nididhyasana also happens at the time of teaching and within the teaching and in guided meditations also. But nididhyasana is letting your mind sit with what you've seen at the time of teaching and contemplate on it. Be with it. Let the mind own it up. Let the mind recognize what it is and what the self is. Getting to know yourself rather than being yourself, rather than the mind, the buddhi, the manas, the emotions being you. You, the buddhi, gets to know you. It gets to recognize you having differentiated itself, the mitya buddhi. The buddhi has become mitya. When you say the buddhi has become mitya, that because it can differentiate itself from you, from the non-dual conscious being. And it recognizes that self-evident being that never changes. So all of these prakriyas are continually pointing at that. And then, that's the dhyanam, that's the nididhyasana. Then, the fourth one, in Panchadashi they use this too, sankirtana. Sankirtana can be just singing bhajans, but that's not, you know, singing praises of the Lord, chanting mantras, this type of thing. That's bhakti, that's devotion, that's something very beautiful, and it's very, it brings so much love into the heart, into the mind. So it's very, very, very powerful for those who I didn't like bhajans at first. I love them now. Mm-hmm. So what I mean is that's not always appreciated by everybody. Everybody has different types of personality and things like that. But that's just a way of really having that bhava, that kind of that love and appreciation. And the music brings that out of you. You know, singing bhajans brings that out. So it's very beautiful. But here, sankirtana means teaching clearly, nicely, what you've learned. And the reason for that is because in all teaching, even within, you know, the world, when you teach something, it's active. Your mind has to unfold something. It has to unfold it. It has to make another person see it. When you're doing that, you come up against your own lack of clarity here and there. And so the teaching itself brings a lot of depth and clarity for you as you do that. So it's even just with one, just if you have one student or one friend who's interested, you know, or some sort of satsang you have where you can express all of that knowledge, it becomes your own. So teaching Sanskrit, for instance, is the best. If you want to learn Sanskrit, you should teach it. Mm-hmm. If you want to learn anything, by teaching it, you start to own it. And also, Bhagawan gives you blessings. When you're teaching something, as that knowledge is coming to, the knowledge that's sitting there resting inside in the chitta and the memory, it comes to consciousness, brings a lot of stuff with it. A lot of associations with it that become clear as they manifest themselves out into the world. You know? And so the more you teach, actually, the more you're bringing out of your unconscious. Associations, clarities, things that have not even maybe been manifest for you yet until you bring them out. Because the unconscious is continually working away at these things. As you teach, you're pulling all of that up. But also, and it also seems like this knowledge is so sacred. It's so, so sacred that, and the mumukshus are so dear. For somebody to be a mumukshu, to actually want to know Ishvara, mumukshu is considered the most dear, the mumukshu, and the jnani is the most dear because the self is the most dear and the jnani's aham is the self. But for the mumukshu, there's just a difference between the mumukshu and between the arti. All devotees, but the arti only thinks of Bhagawan when there's a problem. Please come and save me. But still, Bhagawan is there. That's a beautiful thing. That's wonderful. There's still Ishwara there. There's still that relationship there. But it only comes to mind when there's some problem. And then the Artarti is the one who is going to have a new beginning of some sort of new beginning, and so always ask for Ishwara's grace to bless this new beginning. But in these two, what is primary is getting me out of trouble or blessing this new thing that I want to work out so that I can be happy. So there's still a commitment to samsara. But for there's the mumukshu, there's a commitment to Ishwara. It's a different kind of commitment. It's a different desire than the desire for some sort of gain within the world. It's a desire for a relationship, a knowledge of Ishwara, or of the truth, or of the nature of reality, you know. And so that's the mumukshu who has that is considered, you know, very precious to Ishwara, very precious. And so when this knowledge is taking place, say you're in the position to teach the students who have come your way, Bhagavan makes sure that your questions get answered. Because it's the teacher, the ego's at the time of teaching, the teacher's ego is not there. If it's there, then the class won't be very good, because you'll be trying to think of what to say. That's not going to work. It has to come through. The ahankaras are gone. Hopefully the ahankaras are gone for the student, and they're gone from the teacher. And so that means that there's a collective intelligence where every individual student seems in an uncanny way to get their questions answered. Or so many of us would always say with Swamiji, that was just what I wanted to know. Just as I was wanting to know that, there, he said it. How many times do we have that because of the natural unfoldment of this knowledge? So what I'm saying is Bhagavan takes care of the mumukshus. And taking care of the mumukshus and their needs, he's taking care of the teacher also. You know, because of the additional levels of clarity that keep coming your way as gifts as you go on teaching. So the sankirtana is something like Swamiji will always throw that in there. Not because some people don't want to teach, or they're afraid to teach, or they never know. You have the complex, I don't know enough to teach. You know, I'm not a good enough person to teach. All of these type of things come in, you know. But you know what? It's not really about any of that. It's about not trying to be a guru, not trying to walk on water, not trying to be some sort of special person, but trying to share what you know for your own sake and for the sake of the student. It's not just for the sake of the student. For any teacher knows that you probably, as the teacher, are the most blessed. You know, and so we teach and write books and all of these things, you know, for my own clarity. And so many of the beautiful Prakarana Granthas, these explanatory texts like Panchadashi and Atmabodha, all of these texts, Dakshinamurti, all of them, so often the writer will say in the first verse or so, give, say, prayers to Bhagavan, and then says, I'm writing this for the sake of my own clarity and for the clarity of my students. Because they know. That's what it is. And so you think of teaching, or the teaching or giving this knowledge without being afraid to say, I don't know, or I made a mistake, or let me correct that. It's nothing. It's fine. We're not supposed to know everything. You know, but you know a lot more than your students know. And so you can share everything you know, and then what you don't know, you can find out from somebody else. I remember with Sakshat Kritananda, who was teaching. I went to India a few years ago, and I was studying a text with him that I was actually translating, called the Hastamalakiya Bhasham. There were some areas in that commentary that were really difficult. Otherwise, you know, I was there sitting and we were reading through it, and he's blah, 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 everything was fine. And I was following, and I also kind of got it, and there's no problem. And then there would be sections that were hard, and he would look at and study and on it. And he said, no, I'm going to call so-and-so on that, a pundit down in Chennai. Let me call this Panditji in Chennai. He will know, you know. And so what he would sometimes write then and there, he'd just turn around, could do an email, you know, and type in this question. And he said, don't worry, he'll get back to me. And this pundit would always get back, you know. Sometimes he did it by phone and say, this is what it is. And then Satya said, oh, yeah, I said, okay. And then we would go through. That's how it is. But then Swamiji was reading this kind of something in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And then he was reading away, and I was taking kind of a little class from him on this particular section of the Brihadaranyaka. And he was reading the commentary, Shankara's commentary on this kind of famous neti neti, not this, not this, the section. And then some of it, all of a sudden, Swamiji thought, no, what is that? You know? And he says, Sakshat ji. And Sakshat was in the next room, and he came, and they were talking in Tamil. And Sakshat went and got some other books, and then they were sitting there together looking through all of these things and reading back and forth until they felt like this, that's what it was. Yeah. And then Swamiji went on with it. It's so beautiful. You know, it's, nobody thinks that they're supposed to be sarvajnas, you know. I have all knowledge of everything. It isn't like that, you know. And even you have so much clarity. But then all of a sudden something can, you can wonder about, what is wrong with that? What is wrong with saying, let me think about that. Let me ask Swamiji. You know, that's a beautiful thing. And understanding that gives you the ability to teach. Otherwise, you have an expectation that I won't be able to teach until I know everything. It's just not true. You'll know when you have enough clarity to be able to talk about these things, and then we should do that, because it's such a blessing for you, for your own gain of clarity. So that sankirtanat is not to be just, you know, if you can share to whatever degree you can share, that's a really wonderful thing. If you can, if you're too shy, whatever, or it's not in your prarabdha, you can write about it. You can write it out. Or you can do something, some kind of talking, some way of bringing it forward, you know, that's helpful. So that's why they say the sankirtana, just to gain that nishta and clarity and to have it work through your whole being instead of sitting there. The Dalai Lama meditates 4 hours a day. Yeah, four hours a day, that's his sadhana, 4 hours a day. Nididhyasana is also amazing. It's an amazing thing. Like just to sit there, who was telling me today about the settling mind? Who was saying that to me? How the mind, some anyway, from the meditation, I forget which one of you did that. But it was so true. The mind, if you're sitting there, your mind just giving it the time just to settle down, you know, to go through all of its stuff, whatever it is, to be with it. You were telling me, to be with it. You just let it settle down, you know, and then it'll start doing the next thing of thinking about maybe issues that are important, doing inner child work or whatever comes next. And then just resolving into yourself, just trusting your mind to settle. Like the Buddha uses this thing of dropping a pebble in the water. The water's rippling, rippling, rippling until it settles by itself. What if you stuck your hand in there to try to make it, you know, settle sooner, and then it's bigger. So just let it be. Let it settle. Just let it settle down. And then when it's ready, you can turn it toward yourself or whatever comes. Just to have that love and interest in the mind itself is healing. To have the patience. All of these things make such a huge difference for us. So Shravana, so he says, anyway, just to repeat, because this Dakshinamurti Stotram has everything, it has the entire vision, because it's like that, therefore, do Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana, and Sankirtana on this Dakshinamurti Stotram. Study it, contemplate on it, you know. Study it, question it, think it over, meditate on it, and teach it. Because it's whole and complete, and it will bless you. Give you this maha vibhuti of sarvatmatvam, sarvatmatvam, the truth of who you are. Om Tat Sat. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.